Devotional service is easier than the latter because, being transcendental in nature, it frees one from reaction. In the second chapter, preliminary knowledge of the soul and its entanglement in the material body were explained. How to get out of this material engagement by buddhi yoga or devotional service was also explained therein. In the third chapter, it was explained that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge no longer has any duties to perform. And in the fourth chapter, the Lord told Arjuna that all kinds of sacrificial work culminate in knowledge. However, at the end of the fourth chapter, the Lord advised Arjuna to wake up and fight, being situated in perfect knowledge. Therefore, by simultaneously stressing the importance of both work in devotion and inaction in knowledge, Krishna has perplexed Arjuna and confused his determination. Arjuna understands that renunciation in knowledge involves cessation of all kinds of work performed as sense activities. But if one performs work in devotional service, then how is work stopped? In other words, he thinks that sannyas, renunciation in knowledge, should be altogether free from all kinds of activity, because work and renunciation appear to him to be incompatible. He appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive and is therefore the same as inaction. He inquires therefore whether he should cease work altogether or work with full knowledge. Kindly repeat the translation. Arjuna said, O Krishna, first of all you ask me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagandaragunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagandalalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasundhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvishe Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Deenabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this chapter is Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness. Karma Sannyasa Yoga, in which Krishna will explain to Arjuna many things about the unity between renunciation and work, to dispel Arjuna's confusion, because Arjuna thinks that work and renunciation are incompatible. He thinks that if you give up work, that is, if you renounce, then how can you simultaneously do work in devotion? As Prabhupada explains in the purport, that earlier on in these chapters, Krishna has explained many things. Having explained Buddhi Yoga, which is a process for the soul to get out of its entanglement from material nature, in the second chapter, then he goes on in the third chapter to explain that a person who is situated on the platform of knowledge doesn't have any duties to perform. And in the fourth chapter, Krishna explains that all kinds of sacrificial work ultimately culminate in knowledge. And at the end, he says that you must rise and fight. Yogam atishtha uttishtha bharata. Yogam atishtha, that means be situated in yoga. And uttishtha, and therefore stand up and fight. So now Arjuna has become once again confused. Because it has been said that the culmination of work is knowledge. And then at the end of the fourth chapter he says that now that you have knowledge, perform work. So if work ends in knowledge, then when you have knowledge, why work again? So Arjuna is therefore now seeking clarification. As Prabhupada says here, in the very first line, then in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that work in devotional service is better than dry mental speculation. So the two paths, the path of Karma Yoga or Buddhi Yoga, and when that Karma Yoga is dovetailed in a devotional mood, that becomes Bhakti Yoga. So we have the path of active work in devotion for the pleasure of the Lord on one hand, and we have the other path of Jnana Yoga, with its emphasis on mental speculation, on study of the scripture with the intention of deriving some kind of speculative meaning out of it, and renunciation of work. Sannyasam karmanam Krishna. Sannyasa means to renounce. Karmanam means work. So, O Krishna, on one hand, there is sannyasam karmanam. There is renunciation of work. And on the other, punaha yogam cha. And then again, there is work in devotion. So these two things. Shansasi, you have praised both of them. But these appear to be contradictory to me, O Krishna. How can you praise two contradictory things and recommend these things to me? So which of them is definitely good for me? Please tell me. Yat shreya etayor ekam. Ekam, please tell me one of them among the two, etayor, which is for my benefit, which is auspicious. Shreya. Tanme bruhi, please tell me this. Sunishchitam, very definitely, with certainty. So once again, Arjuna is approaching Krishna as a spiritual master, asking for clarification of his doubts. This is the fifth question that Arjuna has asked to Krishna. So we can see that even if one follows the path of jnana, one has renounced work and has attained so-called perfection, still that is not actually perfection. Lord Brahma also has said the same thing, that their intelligence is impure. They think, āruhiya kṛcṣreṇa param padam tataha patantyado anāgṛta yushmad angrayaha. They think they have achieved the highest destination. They struggle and struggle to achieve that. But actually, at the end of it, they fall down because they have disrespected the lotus feet of the Lord. They think themselves to be liberated, but actually they are not liberated. Because they are following this path of jnana, they are disrespecting the lotus feet of the Lord. They do not think that working for the Lord is supreme. They do not understand this point. Actually, activity is superior to inactivity when that activity is performed for the pleasure of the Lord. In the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto, when Vyasadeva is confused because of his dissatisfaction even after writing so many scriptures, by the Lord's arrangement, Vyasadeva's spiritual master, Narad Muni, arrives there. And he senses Vyasadeva's despondent mood. And he begins to ask him questions. So, my dear great Muni, you have composed so many different literatures, the Puranas, the Upanishads, the Vedas, to give relief from distress to everyone. But it seems that you yourself are dissatisfied about something. So what is the reason? In the Upanishads, you have simply glorified the impersonal, the path of Jnana. And in the Karmakanda, the Vedas, you have simply glorified the path of Karma. But you have not given sufficient emphasis to the process of bhakti, which consists of hearing about the glories of the Lord and hearing His pastimes and messages. Even if, my dear Vyasadeva, you attain perfection, but if there is no devotion there, then what is the use? Naishkarmyam api achyuta bhava varjitam na shobhate jnanam alam niranjanam. He says, my dear Vyasadeva, even if you have reached the perfection of the path of jnana, naishkarmyam api, and that is jnanam alam niranjanam, that jnana is free from all material designations. But in spite of that, na shobhate, it doesn't look good. It's not something very nice, even though that knowledge has completely transcended matter. Why? Achyuta bhava varjitam. Achyuta is Lord Krishna. Bhava is the mood or devotion. So if your transcendental knowledge is devoid of devotion to Lord Achyuta or Krishna, then na shobhate, it doesn't look good at all. What is the use of such devotion? And devotion means work. Many times people feel that, well, we are karma yogis. We don't only sit and chant under a tree. But they don't understand, first of all, how high is the platform for someone who can always sit and chant under a tree. They talk of sitting and chanting under a tree as if it were the easiest thing in the world to do. All day long. It is not easy to be Haridas Thakur. And even if one wants to chant, not all day under a tree, but all one's time and energy has to be utilized for serving. So Prabhupada called this translated bhakti as devotional service. He deliberately used the word service and not just as devotion, because he wanted to emphasize that in devotion there must be activity. The symptom of devotion is activity. Just like when a mother loves a child, there will be some activity in that connection. If the child is hungry and crying, and the mother doesn't do anything, she's just sitting there and say, yes, I love my child, but I'm busy with my own things. So activity will always correspond to the heart. Whatever is the state of heart, whatever are our thoughts, whatever is our consciousness, we must act accordingly. Human beings cannot stay without acting. The living entity itself cannot stay without acting. Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu tishthatya karmakrit. The Bhagavad Gita also Krishna declares, Nahi kaschit kshanamapi jatu. There cannot be even a moment, Nahi kaschit kshanamapi, even one kshana, one second, akarmakrit, without doing any work. So work must be done. So whatever work we do will reflect where our devotion is. Either it is for Krishna or it is for Maya. It is for matter. It is for our own sense gratification. So therefore, Narad Muni tells Vyasadeva that if you develop the highest knowledge of the impersonal, which may be free from material defects, it's free from matter, so you're free of birth, death, old age and disease. But nevertheless, because you're not working for Krishna, you just want to renounce work. You want to attain to the impersonal Brahman. And you think that such sannyasa, sannyasam karmanam, that this renunciation of work is synonymous with perfection. But you are mistaken, because it is devoid of real perfection, which is devotional service to Lord Krishna. So this is the important point. Also, furthermore, Brahma, in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, similarly describes the futility of trying to go on the path of jnana and the path of renunciation of work blindly without actually having devotional service to the Lord. And he says, Shreya Shritim Bhaktim Udasyate Vibho Klishyanti Ye Kevala Bodha Libdaye. He says, Shreya Shritim. Shritim means path. Shreya means the path of all auspiciousness. So what is Shreya Shritim? What is the path of all auspiciousness? Bhakti. It is only devotional service to the Lord that is the all auspicious path. One of the characteristics of bhakti, six characteristics as mentioned by Srila Rupa Goswami, is Shubhada. Not only is the path of bhakti all auspicious, but it bestows all auspiciousness upon everyone. So, Shreya Sritim Bhakti Udasyate Vibho. O Vibho, O my Lord, if someone gives up this all auspicious path of bhakti, Udasya, and Klishyanti Ye Kevala Bodha Labdhaye. Labdhaye means for the attainment of Kevala Bodha, just the pure knowledge. The same Jnanam Alam Niranjanam that was referred to earlier, the impersonal realization. Klishyanti Ye. One simply undergoes so much distress. Tesham aso kleshala eva shishyate nanyad yatha sthula tushavaghatinam. Those of you who are familiar with agricultural operations, you know, when the farmers, they harvest the wheat and then they beat the grains to get the wheat, beat the whole grains to get the grain seeds out. And then the husk remains. And that husk is then utilized for so many purposes. They may feed the cows, or they may use it for many other things. They may sell it in the market, or they may use it for other things. Now, if you just get the husk, sthula tusha, avaghati, and you beat, what will happen? You won't get any benefit, because the purpose of beating, the whole thing is to get the grains out. But once the grains are already out, then there's no point in beating it. It's futile. So what do you gain? You only gain tiredness, right? You go on beating and beating and beating. At the end of the day, what are you left with? Just a tired body. So similarly, Brahma says, by going on this path of impersonal realization, the path of trying to progress by mental speculation and renouncing of work, we get a lot of trouble. That's the only gain. You don't gain factually anything more. There's trouble when you're doing it, and there's trouble at the end of it. So therefore, Brahma is also advising that one should accept the path of devotional service. Many, many places the same thing has been said. Even in Brahma's famous verse, which comes just before the one I quoted, Jnane prayasa mudapasya namantya eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam sthane sthita shrutigatam tanuvan manobhir ye prayaso jita jita pyasita istrilokyam. This is the one that was approved by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his conversation with Ramananda Rai. Brahma is saying that, my dear Lord, one who gives up Jnane prayasam udapasya, the same process of mental speculation, if one gives up, one remains situated in one's social position and dedicates one's life for the process of hearing the pastimes and the glories of the Lord from the mouths of surrendered souls or devotees, and offers one's all respects with one's body, mind and words to these descriptions, then by this process, one can conquer him who is unconquerable. Another name for Krishna is Ajit, one who cannot be conquered. Now those who follow the path of Jnana, they want to become God. That is their philosophy. Danda grahana matrena nara narayana bhavet. That if you take sannyas in the path of Jnana and the Mayavad, then because you've taken sannyas, you got a danda with you, therefore you become, nara becomes narayana. So they greet each other as namo narayana. So they're addressing each other as narayana. So in this way, their path is full of so much trouble. And in spite of that, what is their goal? They're not satisfied with trying to become great in this world. They want to become supremely great by being equal to God, because they think they are God. They are the Absolute. But Prabhupada said, devotees are much more intelligent. What to speak of becoming equal to God, which is impossible, they become greater than God. But greater out of love. Greater not by calculation that I want to become greater. But the devotee, because he wants to serve the all great, therefore he becomes greater than the greatest. He becomes greater than God. In the sense that the Lord submits himself utterly at the feet of his devotee. So therefore even Ajit can be conquered, even though otherwise he is unconquerable. So by the simple process of devotional service, of work in devotion, one can conquer, one can become greater than God. So those who try to renounce work, follow the path of mental speculation and Jnana Yoga, they try to become one with the impersonal, they try to become God, they can never become God, they can just be a spark in the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. But those who don't bother about trying to be God, rather they only want to serve God and God's devotees, for them they attain such an exalted destination and position that such impersonalists can never even conceive of. For example, we see that in Vrindavan, Krishna was completely under the control of his devotees. The devotees were far greater than Krishna. When Krishna was a child and he would dance, and the gopis would clap their hands, and Krishna would dance to their tune. When Mother Yashoda would chastise him, then he would be afraid. When his friends would ask him to play a certain game, sometimes Krishna would lose, and he would be punished. And he would have to carry his opponent on his shoulders. So in this way, Krishna was easily defeated. But he was defeated by the love of his devotees. In this way he was conquered. So this is the path of success. Everything is paradoxical unless one understands the path of devotion. One who wants to become great becomes small. One who wants to become very small becomes great, even though he doesn't want to become great. This is the secret. But one, of course, shouldn't have that calculation, because then that is cheating, and one will never become really great by that calculation. But by genuinely, sincerely trying to be very small, then one understands the all great. How great is all the all great Krishna? Prabhupada said there are many religions that declare God is great. But how great, that they don't understand. Actually, it's not possible for our tiny brains to comprehend the greatness of Krishna. It's impossible. And his wonderful qualities. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing the opulence of Krishna to Sanatana Goswami, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita we read that Mahaprabhu says that in course of time it may be possible for someone to count the number of grains of sand on a sea beach. It may be possible to count the number of stars in the sky. It may be possible to count all the atoms in the whole universe. It may be possible to count the number of snowflakes. But one cannot estimate the wonderful glories and the qualities of the Lord. That's impossible. Even Anantashesh, what to speak of Brahma, Shiva and all the demigods and the great sages, even Anantashesh, who is the Lord's incarnation, even he, with his numerous mouths, has been chanting from time immemorial the glories of the Lord and still not able to reach their conclusion. And even though he will go on chanting, he will still never be able to reach. What to speak of Anantashesh? Even Krishna is sometimes puzzled by his own glories, by his own qualities. Even he cannot fully comprehend himself. That's why sometimes he takes the role of his devotees. He becomes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna becomes Mahaprabhu to understand himself better and also to appreciate what it is about him that the devotees find so attractive. And then of course he also wants to experience what the devotees are experiencing. Specifically, Krishna comes in the guise of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is in the mood of Srimati Radharani. So in this way we can understand that working in devotion is always superior. And there is never a loss. Because especially, work is necessary. Physical work, mental work, all kinds of work are necessary in this world, even to keep one's body and soul together. So if all these things are dovetailed for the service of the Lord, then automatically everything becomes perfect. This is Yukta Vairagya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is Yukta Vairagya as opposed to the dry renunciation that is being talked about here. Sannyasam Karmanam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, utilize everything for Krishna's service. How can anything be meaningless when we understand its connection to Krishna? What is there to renounce in this world when we know that nothing belongs to us? What is there that is inauspicious when we see that everything comes from the all auspicious, that is Krishna? So for one who has the vision, everything is auspicious. But for one who doesn't have the vision, then there is duality. So by working for Krishna in devotion, engaging all one's senses in Krishna's service, automatically all these mysteries and all these apparent paradoxes are revealed and everything becomes resolved. So this is Arjuna's question to Krishna. Which is superior? Working in devotion or renouncing work? And Krishna will of course very clearly outline in the verses to come that work in devotion is always superior. So we'll end here. Are there any questions or any comments? Since Srila Prabhupada is translating yogam as devotional service, we will understand work with full knowledge to mean work with knowledge of devotional service. Work with knowledge of the divinity and supremacy of Krishna. Work with the knowledge of the process of devotional service. Work with sambandha jnana. Sambandha abhideya prayojana. So that sambandha means to understand one's nature as soul, Krishna's position as God, and the eternal relationship between the two. So working with full knowledge means to understand these three things. Sambandha, abhideya, which is the process, and prayojan, which is the goal. That is love of Godhead. Thank you. Yes, it is a speculative knowledge. It is not bhakti yukta jnana. It is not knowledge that is connected to Krishna. Knowledge as a secondary means for developing devotional service is useful. Knowledge that is imbued with devotion is necessary. For example, we hear about the process of bhakti. We hear about the holy name. We hear about the different levels of chanting. So many wonderful things we hear about. We obtain knowledge. But that knowledge is suffused with bhakti. Its purpose is bhakti. The goal of such knowledge is meant for elevating us in love and faith. So such knowledge is important. But knowledge that leads us to the impersonal understanding, knowledge that is not based upon devotional principles, that is based upon speculation rather than on the principle of oral reception in faith, directly accepting the words of Krishna, that knowledge is rejected. Like Mahaprabhu explains to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also, that the words of the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra are like sunlight, as clear as the sunlight. But your explanations of these words are like clouds that cover the sun. I can understand the Vedanta very clearly, but I cannot understand your explanations. The Vedas and the Vedanta must be accepted for its direct meaning. Mukhya artha. You must accept that. But if you give some interpretation and change the meaning, then you can never understand. So knowledge that is direct, the direct meaning, because the direct meaning always leads to devotion. So that knowledge is necessary. It is helpful for the jiva to come to the level of faith and resolute determination in devotional service. Whereas knowledge that is by nature speculative, not based on the principle of understanding the direct meaning, but rather the indirect meaning by speculation, that is to be rejected. So when we talk about the path of jnana or jnana yoga, we're talking about this kind of knowledge. Yes. But of course, eventually, even that knowledge, when one attains the platform, like the Brajabasis did, for example, they even gave up the idea of wanting to know Krishna as divinity or Krishna as God, right? Simply love, that's all. That is called Raga Bhakti. Raga means where the attachment is so strong that one is completely absorbed in the object of one's devotion. And therefore, in such attachment and absorption, there is no place for any other knowledge or anything like that. There was no place in their consciousness for anything else except just pure love, pure absorption. But in general, as sadhakas, certainly we should try to know whatever is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Which? Yes? Anyabhilashita shunyam. Jnana karmadinavritam. Yes. Same, speculative knowledge. Jnana and karma. Karma refers to fruitive work. And jnana refers to speculative knowledge. Anya abhilashita shunyam. Jnana karma adi anavritam. Anukulena krishna anushilanam bhaktiruttamasa. Uttama bhakti. Or that bhakti which is topmost, that devotional service which is the highest, is being defined as that which is anavritam, not covered by. Avrit means cover, anavrit means not covered. That devotional service is supreme, which is not covered by jnana and karma. That means by fruitive activity and by the process of speculation. Krishna could be like this. Maybe the word Krishna means this. Krishna is black, therefore this, therefore this. We make our own speculative conclusions. But rather, it is only Krishna anushilanam, anukulyasya, favorably rendering devotional service to Krishna, uncovered, unmixed with speculative knowledge or fruitive activity. That is the highest bhakti. Yes, if you go too much into that, it could provide it, but if you understand the purpose of it, it is not wrong to analytically understand the shastras. Nana shastra vicharanaika nipuno sad dharma sansthapako. Right? For the six Goswamis it is said, they also very analytically studied the shastras. Nana shastra vicharanaika. So very thoughtfully they applied their minds and they studied and they analyzed. So it is not wrong to analytically study our bhakti shastras. But what would be wrong is that you get so involved in the analysis that you get paralysis as far as your devotion is concerned. Don't get caught up with trying to analyze too many things, because ultimately even the statements of the Bhagavatam sometimes can be confounding for us, or puzzling for our senses. For example, if you try to figure out some things about creation or universal form, sometimes you may get puzzled. And then we try to analyze, and it's good, we should do to some extent, certainly. But beyond a point, it may be very difficult to understand. And we should accept on faith. Therefore, the works of the Acharyas are used, that's why they are necessary for us. Problem comes when the literature, the information given even in the bhakti shastras may contradict what our senses tell us. Therefore, analysis will have its role, but it has its limitations, and we should well recognize those limitations. Ultimately, the motivation must be correct. We must do all these things for increasing our bhakti, increasing our faith. That is the purpose. Not just to become scholars of the bhakti shastras. If our goal is that we just want to be scholarly in the bhakti shastras, and then there may be some tinge of karma that may come in, fruitive activity. What is that? That I want to become famous as a great scholar? Then we want appreciation. If we want puja, labh, pratishtha, fame, etc. So that's karma creeping in. Then jnana, just to understand bhakti because it has some intellectual stimulation for us. Right? So to some extent, yes, there may be. We feel intellectually also satisfied by studying. But it's a byproduct. Importantly, we study the bhakti shastras because it pleases Krishna, it pleases pure devotees. It pleases Prabhupada when we study his books. We read for our own purification. We read for increasing our faith, for our conviction. We read so that we can preach and serve in the mission better. We preach so we can serve the devotees. So therefore, in this consciousness, we can study. So we must also be careful of the jnana and karma elements creeping into our study of the bhakti shastras. If we don't always keep the focus clear on the purpose, why are we studying these shastras? Sometimes too much study of the shastra also brings pride, too much knowledge. There are some organizations, one organization I know of, which is not a Vedic philosophy, but they have some their own other, it's a way of life in the Western world. And they have a policy that when they have their Sunday gathering, something like our Sunday feast, they do not announce who is going to give the sermon or the lecture, because so that nobody should prepare the class and come prepared nicely and, you know, give a very scholarly class. Because when you do that, then you may be proud. You may get proud then. So they just come and speak, you know, from their heart. I'm not saying we should do like that, but I'm saying that. But I'm saying that these things are there. The main thing is that it's the attitude that's important. Even when we study the Bhakti Shastras, what is our attitude? What is our motivation? What is our purpose for doing these things? Okay, so we will. So explanation of the second last line, which says, he appears not to have understood that work in full knowledge is non-reactive. Non-reactive means that there is no material reaction. In the earlier part, in this earlier chapter, fourth chapter, he has discussed karma, vikarma, akarma, right? And he has explained that karma is ordinary pious activity which brings good reaction. Vikarma is sinful activity which brings bad reactions. And akarma is spiritual activities which doesn't bring any material reaction. So he's talking about, Srila Prabhupada here is mentioning, work in full knowledge means akarma here. Is non-reactive, that is, it doesn't bring either pious results or sinful results. It brings, of course, spiritual results. Spiritual work brings spiritual results, but it's non-reactive in a material sense. And therefore, the same as inaction. Inaction means, because Arjuna's logic is that activity causes a reaction, reaction causes bondage. Bondage causes suffering. Therefore, if you don't want suffering, you shouldn't have bondage. If you don't want bondage, you shouldn't have reaction to your work. If you don't want reaction, then don't work. Be inactive. So if there's inaction, then there's no reaction, no suffering. It doesn't work like that. So inaction, really speaking, Krishna has explained all this in the earlier parts. Inaction really means that we work for Krishna. And then there is no reaction to that. So in that sense, we can understand the word inaction here. From a material sense, you're not doing anything material. Okay? So thank you. We'll stop over here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Go Premanande.